Going Linux, episode 40, Computer America, number 4. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you're new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this podcast is for you.
Currently, we publish 3 episodes a month. In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system.
And between user experience episodes, we have listener feedback episodes. In those episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. Finally, following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the Computer America show, minus the commercials.
This is my 5th appearance on the Computer America show from August 19th, 2008.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. Okay. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America Show, the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2008, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And wow, we got lots to do here. A big show tonight.
Big day, big night,
and certainly we can leave the weekend chatter for a little bit later. Later on right now, but let's get started because we got a lot of things to do here tonight. So let's first right now, as so many of you already know, Computer America is the official computer radio talk show for CompUSA, and Lonnie Paul is the director of e-commerce for CompUSA, and he's here with us now to announce the 3 winners of our contest tonight. Plus, he's also here to announce the start of our new contest as well. Hey, Lonnie, welcome into Computer
America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Now, after all that excitement, and we're going to move into our topic for tonight. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and that means we're going to be talking about the Linux operating system because it continues to be more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's latest Windows iteration of Vista. And is Linux right for you? This is one of the things we're going to be talking about. And, of course, if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America.
Thanks. I'm glad to be back on the show.
Ah, so you didn't win the computer tonight.
I was sitting here. I saw on your homepage there that I could register for a Sony Vaio laptop, and I found out you were giving them away tonight.
But
for the Acers.
Yeah, but you know, now you'll have time. We're going to have that up tomorrow morning. We'll get that put into place, and then we'll start that contest as well. 3 Acer computers. Yeah, now, of course, with the Sony Vaio laptop or with the Acers, of course, they're fully capable of, even though they come with Windows installed, they're certainly capable of running Linux, right?
You bet they are.
Yeah.
And you could just give a live CD of one of the Linux distributions a try. You don't even have to install it to try it. That'll give you a chance to check it out and make sure it works just fine.
There you go. Well, listen. There are several interesting topics that tonight that I want to talk to you about on the show this evening. And as we have you on for both hours, we dedicate both hours of the third Tuesday of the month to the Linux. And I'd like to start off a little bit about if we had to give it a subject, it would be things that you can do in Windows and how to do those things in Linux, if you will, okay? Now, it's probably a very, very broad subject, but maybe you might have some things in mind here.
Let's start with, like, how do I get myself infected with spyware?
Now, that one
if I really,
is
if,
really
let's,
tough.
Yeah. Let's say I really wanted to do it.
Well, you could install Windows and then dual boot into Windows. That would do it.
Good answer. Okay.
Yeah. Well.
So, in other words, yeah. It's pretty much impossible to get myself infected with spyware, even if I do it intentionally with Linux?
Well, you know, I'd never say never, but as far as spyware is concerned and even viruses, there are very few, if any, malware authors out there writing those things for Linux. It is more difficult to infect a Linux machine by its very nature, but because these malware authors are trying to get maximum exposure, maximum distribution of their malware, they're not going to write it for Linux. They're not going to write it for the Mac or Unix or Solaris or any of the other operating systems that are out there. They're going to write it for Windows, because it has the largest population of users out there and relatively unsophisticated users at that. We'd like to change that in a Linux world and get those folks over to Linux. And I think once we've done that, maybe the malware authors will target Linux as well. That will be a sign that we've come of age.
So it's a bittersweet thing, I suppose.
You bet it is.
It gets to be a target.
You know, I just mentioned, I was just looking in the chat room, there was an interesting question, and the answer was asked and answered. Matt asks, when is Linux going to be more GUI friendly, you know, and less command line dependent? And somebody answered, the answer was 2006.
Good answer.
I like that answer. Yeah, Mark T9 answered him that. I said I believe it already is, and then of course Mark came up with that. So yeah, it's very graphical user interface with Linux is very Windows like. I mean, very few use the. I mean, I guess if you're really into it, you can use the command line, and you can use the command line on a Mac too. But you know,
or a Windows machine, but most don't.
Yeah, most don't.
Yeah, and, you know, for the average user, they want to use the graphical user interface because it's easier. It's self-prompting. It shows you through prompts what it is you need to be doing. And it's just for someone who's not a power user, someone who's not a geek, it's the way to go. And as Mark said, it in 2006 or thereabouts, things got very, very graphical in Linux, and they were building up to that point. I can't say that you would really say that there was this this turning point in history that is when Linux became graphical. It's been going that way for a long time, but I think 2006 is when people began to accept the fact that Linux had become friendly enough in the graphical user interface that an average user could pick it up and use it.
So most people do. I mean, that's it. People coming over from Windows see the Linux GUI interface and are for the most part right out of the box fairly comfortable.
Yeah, depending on the distribution, you can get yourself into trouble by getting in with the wrong distribution. There are some that are much more geeky, much more, you know, command line intensive, and intentionally so, than others. But if you stick to those that are the most popular, those that have the live CDs, those are CDs that you can put into your CD drive and boot from those without installing the operating system and use it as though it were installed, those kinds of distributions are the ones that are most newbie friendly. And you can find Fedora, you can find Ubuntu, and many others as well that fit into that category.
All right. The toll-free number, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. All night tonight, it's going to be about Linux, and more Linux. We got lots of questions in the Computer America chat room. Give us a call. Larry Bushy joins us for the rest of the show. Stay with us. This is Computer America. It's 34 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or, of course, our chat room, our overflowing chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, talking to Larry Bushy about Linux and more Linux. Larry is our Linux specialist. Every the third Tuesday of the month, we kind of talk about the topic. He is a creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. A lot of discussion in the Computer America chat room. I know Larry is actually in there. You can join us, by the way, going over to the Computer America homepage that says chat with us. Put a username in there. That's the name you'll be known by when you enter. Click the join button and your Java-enabled browser, be it a Mac, Windows, yes, Linux, it all works. We'll move you into the Computer America chat room. A lot of discussion there. A lot of Linux users in there as well, too, Larry. So
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And they're asking some really good questions too in the Computer America chat room. But just before the break, we were talking about some of the things that you can do in Windows, and it's interesting because and then how you do those things in Linux. So there was a couple of comments. People said that they still felt that the Windows provided a better gaming environment. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if you want to play games, you really need to get console. But as far as computer operating systems and games are concerned, yes, Windows has it hands down over everything else for gaming. There are just that many more games for the Windows platform than there are for anything else. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't games for Linux. There certainly are, and there's some very good ones. Mm-hmm. There are some first-person shooters that will rival some of the other ones that are on even the console games, but they certainly are much fewer and farther between than they would be on a Windows platform. So if you want to play games, I'm recommending Windows.
Really? Okay. So
yeah.
There's the man. And it's interesting because we just last night, Kerry, we had Albert from CompUSA who was discussing games. Did Linux come up the conversation at all?
No, because, at least when I gamed and we were playing games like Unreal Tournament and things like that, you wanted a Linux server, to be your gaming server. But other than that, you didn't necessarily want to play the game on Linux. But, I don't think there's any one operating system that's equally good at all things. I mean, Mac has its strengths, mm-hmm. Windows has its strengths, and Linux has its strengths. Mm-hmm. And, I think when you were talking about robust reliability, the Mac and Linux, OS X, which is based on Linux, as I understand it,
yep.
are going to be superior to Windows.
Yeah. Right, and I would agree with all of that. And although, I'm a host of a podcast on Linux, and I appear as your expert on Linux on Computer America, as a realist, I am always looking at what is the best computer, what is the best operating system for the at hand. So I am not averse to recommending Windows when it's appropriate or Mac when it's appropriate or anything else. But as far as a free operating system to get you going and to breathe new life into an old computer or even to give you better performance on a new computer, Linux certainly has some pluses there.
All right. If we had to point out some strong points here, all right, we identified a strong point for Windows, and that was games, because, and we've identified a strong point for the Mac. What would be a quote unquote strong point to identify with Linux?
There are two that I talk about a lot, and one is security, and the other is stability. On stability, there's a reason why at least half of the servers that run the internet run Linux. And I suspect there's much more than that. And that's stability.
That's right, because so much of the servers on the internet are Linux-based.
That's right.
Yeah, and as you say, and stability is probably the main reason why. We're going to just break for 60 seconds, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Give us a call. You got a question about Linux? We're here to help you. It's all Linux tonight.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We're talking this entire show about Linux, talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. and we were talking about the strengths of Linux, talking about how the servers, most of the servers on the Internet are all running Linux. There's a question in the chat room, though, and it's actually a really good question. They want to know what advice you'd give to a first-time Unix user. Now, is there really any difference between Unix and Linux anyway? Is the advice going to be the same?
Unix is generally used on servers and computers that are running corporate networks and things like that. And so there are definitely some differences. There are some reasons why Linux was developed out of Unix, which is where its origins come from. I can't say that I'm a Unix expert by any stretch. I used Unix a little bit. And there are a lot of similarities in the command line. A lot of the commands are identical. The X Windows, which is the thing that runs the graphical environment in Linux, also is available in Unix and runs there. It happens to also be available for the Macintosh as well, since it's based roughly on Unix as well. So there are a lot of similarities, but I would recommend for a home user not to install something like Unix. That's way overkill. You really want to have something like Linux if you're going to install an operating system at all.
Hmm. Why would somebody be running Unix? I mean, isn't that harder to obtain? And it's not free, right, like Linux is?
No, and again, I'm certainly no expert on Unix, so I really can't comment too much on it. But my understanding is, no, it's not free. It is more for a corporate environment than it would be for an individual user, although it can be installed in an individual machine, and you could use it that way.
Sure. Well, I mean, you could install a Windows 2003 server in your home. Doesn't mean that you should.
Exactly.
What was that line from Homer Simpson? They said, see, I told you they could deep fry my hat. They didn't say they couldn't. They said they shouldn't.
Yeah, good
point. I just like that line, sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just looking through the chat room here to see that. It says, Larry, when are we going to see a Linux version that's multi-thread on the code? I believe that the only one that is close to that is Snow Leopard that isn't out yet. When are we going to see a Linux version that can handle those types of systems better? I guess they're referring to dual-core systems.
Yeah, you know, you must be a lot faster reading the chat room than I am. I have a lot of this stuff going by.
It's a talent.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of practice as well. Multi-thread, there are 64-bit kernel, 64-bit versions of Linux out there. I don't know about multi-threading too much. I'm certainly not an expert from that perspective. There are people working on that. I don't know at what stage of development they are. But I do know as far as 32-bit versus 64-bit, you can get a fully functional 64-bit operating system in a Linux flavor that will run just as well as a 64-bit version of Windows, and maybe even better if your 64-bit version is Vista.
So you're saying it's already out there as far as a multi-thread code on a 64-bit system?
Sure.
Because they're saying that, as far as they know, this you know, Snow Leopard, I guess, it must be, what, the next Mac
yes,
thing?
Is that what Snow Leopard is? Snow Leopard is the next iteration of OS 10. It'll be 10.5 now. I guess it'll be 10.6.
So, right. Well, I have a dual processor laptop that I decided that I would try to install a 64-bit version of Ubuntu. I installed it. It was quite successful. And then I realized that I don't have any more than 3 gigabytes of RAM, so why am I installing a 64-bit version? I'm really not going to use it. I don't use it for anything that would use both, you know, need the power of both processors simultaneously and multi-threaded. So I went back to the 32-bit version, primarily because with 64-bit versions of anything, there are going to be more incompatibilities with hardware because of the unavailability of 64-bit drivers. They just haven't come along as quickly as the 32-bit, and certainly 32-bit drivers have been around a lot longer for the average laptop.
Now, what operating system does Larry run? What I know you run Linux, but what what flavor?
Well, I have installed on two of my machines two different versions of Ubuntu. On one machine, I have plain vanilla Ubuntu, which runs the GNOME windowing environment or desktop environment. And on my primary machine, I have Kubuntu. The K stands for KDE, which is another desktop environment. And in my opinion, the Kubuntu is a lot more like Windows from the perspective that it gives you a lot more ability to do tweaks to the operating system. And prior to Linux, I was a Windows power user, so I like the tweaks. And Ubuntu, on the other hand, is a lot more forgiving. It's a lot simpler interface. It doesn't have as many tweaks visible, but you can still use things like the command line to make those tweaks happen. So the Ubuntu one is I have installed there just so that I can answer questions on both GNOME and KDE when I get them.
Well, now, I guess the flip side to that question is what does Larry run, which you've now answered. I guess the next part of that is what does Larry do? And maybe that's why you pick these. But obviously, each one has strengths, you know, versions, iterations of Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So you start, I mean.
What are you using the PC for?
Right. What do you
primarily
do with it? Yeah.
Ah, okay. You're talking about applications and those kinds of things.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I do everything on my Linux machines.
Well, that cleared that up. Thanks.
Hey, give me a chance to flesh this out a little bit. I'm surfing the Internet. I am recording a podcast, which is heavy from the perspective of demand on the sound card and things like that, and the processing, too, editing the podcast. I edit my photos that I take with my video camera and still cameras, digital cameras on there. So I'm doing the kinds of things that the average user would do, plus doing a podcast as well. So
it sounds like it. I was just editing some pictures myself.
Stuff. Yeah.
But I was using, you know, $100 Adobe Elements and, you know.
Yes, well, and you can get that kind of software for Linux as well, except that it doesn't cost you $100.
I want to ask you a question I see in the chat room, and I'm a little puzzled by the question because, well, the question is, can you clone, say, a polished Ubuntu hard drive with applications, put it on another PC, and will the OS, will the drivers in the OS change automatically to its new environment? Now, I'm a little puzzled by the question because I understand this is a very Windows frame of mind type thought, like I want to clone my Windows because I don't have my serial numbers for my applications. But so I'm trying to understand the question because Linux I don't think takes anywhere near as long to install, and as I understand it, getting the drivers to for your devices isn't very difficult either. I guess if you know what you're doing with Linux, but given that, with this question, can you clone? Say you've got this Ubuntu and you've got it exactly the way you like it, and now you've got another PC and you want to move that over, but clearly it's going to have a different video card, a different sound card. Are you aware of a way to do that?
Absolutely. There are a couple of ways that you can do it. You can do what is suggested by the question, which is clone your hard drive. And there is software out there for doing that. In fact, I received a question recently from a listener to Computer America talking about the cloning software that we talked about back in May, I think, CloneZilla. That's some software that you can use to make an image file of your partition or the entire hard drive, and then you can restore it to the same computer or to a different hard drive. So you can use it for backups or you can use it for cloning. And there are other software programs out there that do similar sorts of things, but CloneZilla is one of them, and we can probably flesh this out a little bit more after the break.
Absolutely.
CloneZilla, so I'll have to put a link to that in the show notes.
All right.
I'll send that to you.
Lots of other good questions in here, including he just wants to know if a Windows user should switch to Linux. Okay.
I think I know the answer to that.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. So there you go. Hey, we're going to break. We'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us in this hour and the next because it is the third Tuesday of the month, which we dedicate the entire show to the subject of Linux. Again, if you missed the big announcement, we announced our three winners for our CompUSA a contest that finalized this past week, and also announced the brand new contest where we're giving away three Acer desktop desktop computers, and that information should be up at the Computer America homepage tomorrow morning when we get that put in place. Carrie, did Lonnie give you the email address or the link to where people can write if they want to get a list of winners? Did he give you those?
Not yet, but I'm sure he's going to send that to me.
Okay.
But it may even already be up there if I do a quick search for it. But they have a page that will be devoted with the winners, just as they did last month or the month before last with the Mogo Mouse giveaway.
All right, there you go. So, well, that all, and some people in the chat room are also asking who won. So we'll certainly make that available. In the meantime, some of the other topics that we're going to be touching upon, I know you also have listener questions that you can answer. We'll address some of those. Some of the other things basically are how to get programs to run automatically when your computer starts in Linux, how to shut down and reboot the computer in Linux. So some of the operational things that are some questions and things that we're going to be addressing in the second hour of the show. Even how to change your mouse behavior from a single click to a double click. I know how to do that in Windows. I know how to do it in the Mac, but I don't know how to do that in Linux. So these are some of the things.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Yes, we'll talk about all of that in hour two of the show. By the way, just for our listeners, if people want to listen to the Going Linux podcast, where do they hear it?
Well, you can go to the website, which is goinglinux.com. There are a number of buttons on the left-hand side that allow you to subscribe depending on how you listen to it. You can listen directly from the website using a flash player. You can download an MP3 or an AUG file. An AUG file is the open source version of MP3 to put a spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you have a podcatcher, you don't need an iPod to listen to a podcast, of course, but if you have a podcatching software, you can subscribe to either the MP3 feed or the AUG feed, or you can subscribe in iTunes. There's a link right on the website to subscribe if you have iTunes on your Mac or your Windows PC. Just click that, and it'll subscribe you right up, or you can search for Going Linux in iTunes.
There you go. And by the way, just for those of you who have iPhones, you should know that the next version, not the next version, but an update was just issued yesterday, late in the day, 2.0.2. Just issued for that. So just hook your iPhones into your iTunes and click the update button, and you'll get it updated. A little bit of controversy over at the iPhone Atlas website, saying that some people are experiencing some problems with it. Some people are claiming that some of the applications they have won't run with it. So, you know, just take that with a grain of salt. Be careful. You know, as with anything that you upgrade, make sure that your iPhone is backed up, which it is. Usually done automatically using iTunes. So if you're ready to chance it, go ahead. I did it. Worked fine. Another full hour of the Computer America Show coming at you here on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, where we got a lot of people in there. Larry Bushy also participating in the chat room during the break. Why don't you stop in, say hi, ask him some questions. We'll be back with another full hour of the Computer America Show. Stay with us.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net. 855.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight. Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live at ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello, and welcome into Hour 2 of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And if you're just joining us, we are... it is the third Tuesday of the month, and we're dedicating the entire show of to the topic of Linux. We also announced the three winners of our Computer America CompUSA contest that we've been running for about a month, where we just awarded tonight three Sony Vaio laptop computers. All that information will be up at the Computer America website tomorrow sometime during the day. I've already alerted our webmaster to get all that posted. He has all the elements to do that. In addition to that, you can listen to the Computer America Show if you miss any portion of it, because we archive the past 2 weeks of the programs at ComputerAmerica.com. We have an XML page, or just click the listen button. You can do it there. If you have podcasting software, you can subscribe to the podcast as well on our XML page at that location, or over at Apple's iTunes, go to the podcasting section, keyword Computer America, and carry. We also have our Computer America Archive Vault available now. Now, how does that work?
Well, the Archive Vault has all of 2007 completely indexed. All of 2006 is available, although it may not be completely indexed. And we have the first quarter of 2008. It's available but not indexed. Indexed means that we know who was on that show and what the details of that show contained. So if it's not indexed, it's just by date. So you can go back to our show notes at ComputerAmerica.com and manually sort of line them up if you want to. We're in the process. It's a very time-consuming, labor-intensive process of getting those all indexed. A big thanks to GoDaddy for providing us the server space and the bandwidth required to bring all of these shows to you, because before this, you know, our shows were only available for 2 weeks, after which they were, up until recently, gone forever. But they weren't really gone. They were just sort of put in a shoebox and put in a time capsule. We've removed them, dug them up, and put them on the, it was a very mild time capsule, give you, and made them available to you, because GoDaddy is eating the expense. They're basically paying for the server, they're paying for the bandwidth, and in exchange for that, I get to say this. Hosting for the Computer America Archives is provided by GoDaddy.com, where you can take advantage of $1.99 domain names, transfers, and renewals with each and every new non-domain product you buy. Plus, if you enter the code America, that's AMERICA, when you check out, you can save an additional 10% on any order. Now, you know how some coupon codes only apply to renewals, or some coupon codes only apply to new domains? This coupon code works for anything that you... So if you are currently a GoDaddy customer, you're going to do anything with them, enter the code America. We get credit for that. GoDaddy gets a happy customer. You get to save money. Everybody wins. It's a fantastic deal. Obviously, there's some restrictions apply. See the site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Now, the archives, again, ComputerAmericaArchives.com. And we're going to welcome on AdMuncher. AdMuncher is going to be our sole, with the exception of GoDaddy, our sole sponsor. And we're going to try this out and see how this works for a few months. Now, I don't know if you've ever used AdMuncher, but it's a really cool product. It sits in your system tray. And we're going to bring on someone from AdMuncher to tell us more about it. We've had him on before. We're going to bring him on again. And we'll explain what it is, what it does, and why you must have it if you're a Windows user.
Now, also, I wanted to mention this to you as well, because along with each of those three Sony Vaio laptops that we gave away, we will also be including a copy of System Mechanic from Iolo Technologies, the PC the PC tune-up experts. You can check it out at www.iolo.com, and you can get any of Iolo's products directly from CompUSA.com. And, Kerry, get this, in our new contest, We are also, with each one of the Acer desktop computers, we will be giving away a copy of System Mechanics from ILO Technologies as well. So there you go.
That carries on. Very cool of them.
Yes, very nice. So thanks so much to the good folks over at ILO Technology, System Mechanic. A copy of will be awarded with each of the three Acer computers to be given away. So that said, let's bring back our guest, Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. We are talking all Linux this hour, and of course the last hour as well. And during the break, or just before the break, I mentioned some of the topics and things that we're going to be talking about. And because I had actually asked you before we went on the show, Larry, what are some of the things that you think might be of interest to people who are just getting into Linux? And you had actually suggested some of these things, such as how to shut down and reboot the computer in Linux. Now, normally you would think, well, just shut down and reboot. But obviously there's some things going on there.
Well, not necessarily. I wanted to emphasize how similar Linux is to Windows in a lot of ways. And these particular topics may be a little simplistic for some of the more techie listeners that we have in the chat room this time around. But there are definitely some things that the newbie who's switching from Windows wants to know. And some of the questions that we talked about are not quite so obvious as how do I shut down my computer. Mm-hmm. So, I think there are some things to learn here.
I just reach for the power cord and yank it out of the wall. That shuts it right down.
It does. Do that. It may not be the best for the hard drive, but that would shut it down quick.
Yeah, it does. I just pull it right out of the plug, right out of my uninterruptible power supply. You know, I just yank it out of that, and then it just turns off so well. It's just a wonderful thing. Now, obviously,
is that the uninterruptible power supply you plugged your laser printer into?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, exactly.
Every time I print, I hear this beeping sound.
Yeah, I don't know why that happens. You know, the lights dim slightly. It's amazing. Yeah. And toner everywhere. So talk about how do you shut down and reboot the computer in Linux?
Well, let's start with how do you do it in Windows, because there are a couple of ways to do it in Windows. One is to press Control-Alt-Delete all together, and then a little box comes up, and you select Restart or Shut Down, depending on what you want to do. Another way to do that in Windows is to click the Start button, then select Restart, or if you want to shut down, you select Turn Off the Computer or Shut Down, depending on which version of Windows you're actually using. In Linux, it is very similar, especially if you're using the KDE Desktop Manager. In Linux with KDE, you can press Control-Alt Backspace. Now, this doesn't restart the computer, but it does restart the window manager so that essentially you're asked to log back in again. That can be handy if you've got a little glitch with your display or something like that. So Control-Alt-Backspace. But to shut down or restart the computer, there's a menu in the KDE version of Linux that's in the lower left-hand corner, just like the Start menu. You click on it. It's called the K menu, K for KDE. You click on that, and then you select Log Out or Restart Computer right from that menu right there. You can also, now this is something that not every newbie Linux user will know, you can right-click on the desktop, and a menu pops up that includes Log Out or Shut Down.
Mm-hmm.
So there are three different ways to do it, and one way that I just described to restart the window manager, get you to log back in.
Yeah. Okay, is this ever proven to be an issue? I mean, is it because that there are a number of different ways to do this?
Well, my reason for bringing it up is more to illustrate how similar the activities are between Windows and Linux, and the fact that in many cases you're not going to notice a big deal of difference between Linux and Windows when you do make that switch. There are a lot of similarities. So that's one of those things that is really, really similar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some other things that work in a similar sort of way, but it's a little more difficult to find. Like, where do I change my mouse clicks from single click, or from, yeah, from single click to double click, which is the way that
Windows.
Yeah, exactly. And most Windows desktops, out of the box, at least from Windows 95 on to Windows XP, had double click as the default. And I don't know under Vista whether single click is the default or not, but each user has their own preference as to whether or not they want to single click on things or double click on things to launch them. So it's nice to know how to do that and switch it back and forth depending on what your preferences are.
Mm. Now, I also know that you get a lot of listener questions that are coming in. We've been reading some of the, from the chat room, but you also have some as well. Why don't you pick one that you might think be of value to all, our listeners and go with that.
Okay, well, I have one sitting at the top of the pile here that gets back to something that we were talking about earlier, which is cloning your hard drive. And this one is from Mike. And Mike writes, Hi, I decided to once again start listening to some podcasts, and as a fair newbie, use Kubuntu, by the way. I got a number of Linux podcasts. One of your episodes from back in May was the first in a half dozen I downloaded of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a good choice, as I had just last week come across a reference to and downloaded an ISO for CloneZilla, which we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. I have untried? yes. I have a CD that I am now going to launch and see how it works backing up my 40-gigabyte hard drive on my gateway. Thanks. So that's from a new user who is about to use CloneZilla to try to clone something or to try to use it as a backup. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that someone had found us on Computer America and had listened to us and was taking our advice to switch over to Linux and is making use of some of the things that we had talked about. So not really a question, but a little more of a comment. But
well, it's gratifying to know that you're talking about, and I mean, I get the same thing when I hope here. When we talk about something, we get email from people who don't necessarily ask a question, but say, you know, I picked up something from that, or they make a comment about it, and then they know they benefit from it. So it's always nice to know that. It kind of keeps you focused and lets you know that you're on the right track with the listeners.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. So good call, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I do have another one. This one is indeed a question. This one's from Frank.
Well,
and we'll talk about Frank's email.
And we'll be back with Frank, and we'll talk about that when we return. Yes. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or, of course, our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, where Larry Bushy is also participating. It's all Linux tonight. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Computer America is the longest-running national radio show on computers. Check it out at ComputerAmerica.com. Computer America airs every weeknight from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the Business Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com with a chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, is with us all this hour. And so, Larry, you were just reading a listener question before the break?
Yeah, I just got started on this one. This one's from Frank. He says, okay, when I bought my new computer, I decided to give Linux a try. I installed Kubuntu Linux at your suggestion, Larry, on my old Windows 98 computer. So he was reviving an old one, I guess, mm-hmm. when he bought his new one. It runs so much faster now. I was surprised to find out that Firefox was not installed. Kubuntu uses something called Conqueror, which works okay, but I used Firefox on Windows, and I know it's available for Linux, too. I tried installing it from the Mozilla site, but that didn't work out so well. Help.
Uh-huh.
I've heard you mention that there's a ton of software available for free for Linux. But where do I find it, and how do I get it installed? Most important, how do I install Firefox, Frank? Hmm. Well, in response to this, I've already sent Frank an email, so he has the instructions. But I thought I'd give a little bit of background on installing software in Linux for the new listeners who haven't used Linux before, as well as to give, I think there are about six or seven steps to actually installing it, which shouldn't take long to describe. But the creators of Linux distributions normally make all of the free software that's available for Linux available in something called a repository. That's shorthand for a package repository, and the software itself is called software packages, or just abbreviated as packages. So there's a little bit of a language thing going on here. Mm-hmm. Software is packages. Repositories are essentially the online stores of free software, stores being storage as opposed to buy it type of store. The concept of software repositories isn't really all that familiar to people who have never used Linux before, especially moving from Windows. But it's kind of like going to a candy store where everything is free. You don't have to go to a store to purchase software for Linux. You don't have to go online and purchase it, as you do with many of the Microsoft applications that you might want to install on your Windows machine. For Linux, almost everything that's available in the repositories for just about every distribution is specifically tested for that distribution of Linux, and it's available in the online repositories at no charge for that distribution.
Hmm.
So with that background, unlike the various shareware websites for Windows, where you can also get free software for Windows that might be add-ons or applications and so on, the Linux repositories are generally managed, maintained, and updated by the Linux distribution itself, and the software that's there is usually tested quite fully for the particular distribution of Linux before they make it available in the distribution. Of course, you can go online and you can find applications for Linux and you can install it outside of the repository, but if you stick within the repository, you're pretty much ensured that it is designed and tweaked for that particular distribution.
Okay. All right.
I was just going to describe how you would install a package and a software package in Linux, and it's really not that difficult. Would you be interested in hearing that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Okay. Well, the first thing that since Frank is using Kubuntu, which is a KDE desktop, let's describe it from that perspective. Kubuntu uses something called the Adept Package Manager. Now, a little definition, a package manager is software that allows you to install and update software.
All right. And we'll continue on. All right. We're going to break, and then we'll continue on the installation procedure. For this. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be right back with Larry and continue. This is Computer America. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We were listening to Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. So continue on, Larry.
We're talking about a package manager.
Yes.
One more time is what?
Okay, we were talking about the fact that Linux has something called packages, which is software applications,
mm-hmm.
and they are available in repositories, which are online stores of those software applications. And then a package manager is something that allows you to install software packages onto Linux and also allows you to do software updates, too. So we were talking about Frank, who has installed Kubuntu, the KDE version of Ubuntu, onto his computer, and he wanted to know how to install Firefox because it's not included in Kubuntu by default. So he would go to the K menu, which is the KDE equivalent of the Start menu, and in the system selection, he would select Adept, which is the name of the package manager, and it actually says Adept Package Manager there. After launching Adept, he can then search by name or by description for any package he wants, simply by entering it into the search field. So he would type the word Firefox into that search field and press Enter on the keyboard. As simple as that. The list of packages that is available on, or the list of packages that are available, rather, on the repository is then filtered down to only those that have something to do with Firefox. They include the browser itself, any plugins for the browsers, and any other options that are available. Now, the main Firefox package is named simply Firefox. And so what Frank needs to do is right-click on Firefox, on the word Firefox, and a menu pops up, and select Request Install. There's a button that says Apply Changes, so if he wanted to actually install more than one package at the same time, he could do that. But since we're just installing Firefox, he clicks on Apply Changes in the toolbar, and then what happens is it begins to download from the repository Firefox and anything else Firefox needs to install on his particular version of Linux. And when the installation completes, the package manager is sitting in front of him with the Firefox package flagged as installed in this case. So then he just closes the package manager, and unlike Windows, when you install a package in Linux, you do not have to reboot. You can install as much software as you want, and you can begin using it right away.
What do you do for software that's not in the package manager? What if you want something that's not in there?
Ah, that's a good question. There are a number of other repositories that are out there. There are some third-party ones that you can add to the package manager that are provided in there by, in this case, by Canonical, the developers of Kubuntu. There will be some in there that you can add in. But in many cases, if you wanted to install something like Skype, Skype is a voice over internet application. If you go to the Skype website, they have a Windows version, and they have a Linux version there as well. And their documentation is very good as to how to install it. So essentially what you do there is you download the package, which doesn't end in .exe as it would in Windows. It ends in something else, but it doesn't really matter what it ends in. With the Skype application, once you've downloaded it, let's say you downloaded it to your desktop, you would right-click on it, and then you would have one of the options that would be available to you is to install it using a package called, an application called GDEBI, G-D-E-B-I. And that would install it for you just as though you had started from the Adept package manager.
So it doesn't actually import into your own package manager, or there's no way to add it to your package manager?
You can do that as well. And there are instructions on for that on the Skype website.
All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break here, just a quick 60-second break. We'll come back. You've piqued my interest now. I have some follow-up questions. So don't go too far. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Stay with us. Welcome back into the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We're broadcasting coast to coast and around the world through the web at ComputerAmerica.com. Talking with Larry Bushy, the host of the Going Linux podcast, talking a little bit about installing software in Linux, what the procedure is. Now, I can understand the advantage of having a package manager, having this application you bring up that says, here's a listing of everything you could possibly want to install. Mm-hmm. But there's no way it could contain a listing of everything I would want to install. So you look through your listing, you say, okay, you want to go to Firefox, you type in Firefox, or I would assume it's alphabetized, you type F or something, and it would take you to all the applications that start with F. You know, sort of like trying to find a book in a library. So you're like, okay, so Skype's not in there, so I want to go to Skype. I go to the Skype's website, and Skype says you can follow these steps to install it this way. But what if I just want to keep all of my package manager? What if I want to keep all my software in one package manager? Is there any even for me to save that or to share it with other people so that they might want the same things I want and they don't have to go through all that hassle that I went through?
Well, I'm not sure that I understand the hassle part of it.
It would just be nice if, well, if I have to go to Skype.com and follow their directions to install Skype, what if I follow the instructions to add Skype to my package manager? Could I do that? And then could I somehow share that package manager or back that package manager up so that time I want to install Skype, I don't have to go back to Skype.com and follow the instructions again, and for that matter, for any other Linux-based application that isn't in the package manager, that I have to go to the website, and I'm sure each one has their own unique instructions on how to install it, and if I could just get them all into my package manager, then I wouldn't have to repeat this process the next time I want to install the application.
I get it, yes. Well, first of all, when you do install software outside of the package manager, in most Linux distributions, you can still manage that software from within the package manager, so that if you want to uninstall it, you go to the package manager and you click uninstall. So from that perspective, it's already in the package manager, but I think what you're looking for is to add something to the package manager that says, if I want the latest version of Skype, it's going to update it for me, as the package manager does with every other software application that it installs for you, right?
Well, that's not what I meant at all, but that's a very, very good question. I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't even know the package manager did that.
Yes. The package manager.
So, yes, that is exactly what I meant to ask you.
Well, I'm glad. depending on the software distributor, if they're very Linux friendly, they will give you a line of text that you can add to the package manager, and it's as simple as adding that line of text into the package manager that is really nothing more than the URL for the location of their repository, and their repository may have only their application in it, but by adding that line of text, and there might be a security key that goes along with that. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. But as a minimum, add that line of text into your package manager, and then the application, in this case Skype, would be available from within the package manager, and in the case of Frank's package manager, he was using Adept. So he would be able to go in there and search for Skype and would find it and then would be able to right-click on it and choose install. Now, the advantage of doing that over simply downloading it and installing it from your desktop is that once you have the repository registered, essentially, with the package manager, it will keep that application up to date so that if there's a new version of Skype, when the updater runs, it will look at all of your repositories that you have registered, including the Skype one, and say, is there a new version? If there
That's
is,
nice.
It will say, do you want to download it and install it? If you do, away you go. You've got the latest version of Skype automatically downloaded for you, just like for Windows users, the Windows updater that updates you with all those virus patches and so on, except that in Linux, you're updating not just the operating system, but each piece of software that you have installed, each application.
I love those automated updating systems, when they work, it's a beautiful thing, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. With Windows, you know, each one has to have its own independent updater, and you could have, you know, all these things starting in your startup because, you know, this application wants to check and that application wants to check. Mm. Some application can check if you turn it on, but if you don't know to turn it on, it doesn't. To have one central resource that checks all of it for you. I'll tell you, a big one would be like OpenOffice. I don't know if there's a new OpenOffice version out. I have to go to OpenOffice.org and look.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that if there's a way that you can put it in your package manager and have OpenOffice, you know, constantly update, like my Firefox, it checks for updates when I start Firefox in Windows.
Right.
So if I don't start Firefox, I never know.
Right.
Not that it matters, I suppose, if I'm not starting.
But Firefox also in Linux has the ability to check on its own if there's an update, but it is in the package manager, and OpenOffice is in the package manager for most the Linux distributions as well. So it will give you the latest version when it's available. So those kinds of things are very handy to have, and you don't have five, six, seven, a dozen updaters running in your system tray and using system resources when they go out and check and slowing down your computer. You have one package manager doing that.
Sweet.
I think that's brilliant. I wish Windows had that. I wish that it would check all of my updates for me, because it's a bit of a hassle to just stay on top of all of the updates for all of the software in Windows. And I know, I am a minority, a major minority, if there's such a thing, of people who actually stay on top of, I've got some great applications, and I always want the latest updates for them. The AdMuncher I mentioned has updates practically every day, just like antivirus. And it will apply them automatically, but I don't like to wait that long. I check it myself, and if it says there's an update, I grab it, but I have to actually start the app, open the application, go to updates, click check now, click apply, if there's an update available. Same with Spyware Blaster, but I guess if you pay $10, it'll automatically check for you. The antivirus, it will update on its own, but like I run AVG, which is the free antivirus, I right-click on it and say check for updates again. I force it rather than wait for it. Because if I don't see it run, which is often when the automatic thing happens, it happens in the background, it doesn't tell you, then I wonder, did it run? So the only way I can know is to check and see if there's any updates available.
There are some things that you can do that sort of emulate that. That's one of the reasons why I like Version Tracker, the Version Tracker Pro website. It goes ahead and scans and sees everything you have on your computer, and it attempts to do in a different way what Larry's kind of describing, where it checks all your drivers, checks all the applications, everything, sees that knows that there's an update that's been submitted by the different manufacturers. If it does, then it goes ahead and it lets you know and then tries to update it for you. It's almost like a cloud computing way of doing it, if you will, but right.
But Craig and Kerry, am I detecting some Linux envy now?
Well, I wouldn't call it envy. I wouldn't call it envy. I would say I'm beginning to understand some of the appeal.
Yes.
Well, let's leave it at that. Let's not take it too far.
I'll take that. Chipping away a little at a time.
That's right. Well, and I appreciate, we've had a number of Linux experts on the show, and I have to tell you, you just explain it so much better than some of the others.
Oh, thank you.
And I think there's a lot that they take for granted. I think in all the times that we've had other guests on, we've never once talked about exactly how the package manager works. So I really appreciate you walking us through that, because to me, saying package manager, I mean, you might as well be talking about some industry trade word. I mean, it's like, okay, I nod my head and go, well, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. So no, I appreciate I'm glad we brought that up tonight. Hey, that music means it's time for another break. We'll take a quick one here and be back. One more segment left in tonight's show. Stay with us.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. I've been talking to Larry Bushy for the entire show. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. So any quick similarities to Windows that you can tell our listeners about, Larry?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that is very similar in Linux as it is in Windows is how you move files around. In Windows, of course, you have the Windows file manager, the Explorer, the Windows Explorer, and you can drag files around from folder to folder. And if you want to do something like move a file rather than copy a file from folder to folder, you can right-click and drag it and drop it, and a little menu will come up. With Linux, you don't have to right-click. You just normally drag it over, and at least in KDE, it will come up with a menu every time. Now, there are ways to force it to move or copy, much as you do in Windows, where if you hold the Control key as you drag something, it forces a copy. Hold the Shift key, it forces a move. But under KDE, you drag it, the menu pops up and asks you, do you want to copy, do you want to move it, or do you want to create a shortcut?
That's nice.
Under GNOME, it works more like Windows, where you drag it, it defaults to making the copy.
Yeah.
So very, very similar. And for the average user, switching from Windows, it would be very familiar.
Yeah, on the Mac, if you drop it, it just moves it. But if you move it to another hard drive, then it makes a copy of it. You can also, if you move it to the same hard drive and you want to make a copy, you hold down the Option key, and then you can do that, and it'll do it that way as well. That's how. So you do get some choices either way. Yep. So that's kind of nice. Yeah.
Exactly.
And of course, it works differently, of course, as you say, depending upon what the distribution you're using.
What distribution and what desktop environment that you're using? Yes. Either
yep.
way.
Uh huh.
Another similar thing is if you want to lock your workstation, this is something that people in an office might do if they walk away from their desk for a moment. Under Windows, you would, if you have a keyboard with a Windows key, you would hit the Windows key and at the same time press the L. That immediately sets it into a lock, and then you have to press enter your password to get back in again. Mm-hmm. Under Linux with KDE, you can choose the K menu and then hit lock session, and it does exactly the same thing. You need to enter your password to get back into your workstation.
Very nice. So there are a lot of similarities, obviously, and that's a good thing. Well, it all depends what if you want similarities, Linux offers you a distribution that if you don't want, you want to do other directions, you want something different. You have a choice with Linux because you have all these different distributions that are aimed at targeted different users with different things in mind.
You can even tweak it out to make it look like and behave like a Mac with the menu at
go.
The top and the dock at the bottom. Mm. There's a lot of things.
The freedom of choice, and that's what you get with Linux. Larry, I want to thank you for being here on tonight's show. We're just flat out of time. Again, the Going Linux podcast. Larry, we'll catch you on the next month, the third Tuesday of the month, for another 2 hours.
I'll be here.
Been a pleasure.
Of course, we'll have a link to your Going Linux podcast in our show notes for folks who want to continue to learn more on Linux.
Absolutely. Larry, thanks again for being with us here tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Have a good evening. Good night. All right. Wednesday Madness.
Oh, we got a lot to talk about.
Oh, boy, do we ever.
We got some feedbacks.
Yeah, feedbacks, and we got the new contest up in place. That's all coming up tomorrow night as well. Thursday's going to be jammed. We got 4 guests on Thursday. Everybody seems to like that, so we're going to continue
that. I like
it. Yeah. That's right.
A little something for everybody when there's 4 guests on,
That's
guarantee.
That's true. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.